It's that time on the radio where we listen to Bill Blevins from Blevins Franks. How are you, Bill?
I'm fine, Howard. How are you?
I'm very well. Well, earlier this month, the Swiss Federal Tax Administration confirmed that Switzerland had handed over details of accounts held by 7,000 financial institutions. Now, I suppose this means that the banking secrecy is really over now.
Well, Howard, you know, we've been discussing the circumstances of banking secrecy and exchange of information for a very long time now, starting back with the European Union Savings Tax Directive, when I said to you then, 12 or 13 years ago, that I thought that was the beginning of the end of banking secrecy. Perhaps we have now arrived more or less, in certainly in the Western Hemisphere, we've probably arrived at the end of the end, given the fact that 7,000 institutions have now been handing over information to the Swiss tax authority, who have then automatically been handing it on somewhere else. I mean, Switzerland is the world's biggest centre for managing offshore wealth, and they've now, as I say, begun exchanging information automatically, client data, with tax authorities in dozens of other countries. Indeed, it will increase in number to more than 150 countries once the full impact of this is put together. And I honestly believe that this does really, as I say, in the Western Hemisphere, there are still areas of remote locations where there is still some form of banking secrecy. But banking secrecy in the Western world, as we know it, has come to an end. The first part of this programme has brought 7,000 financial institutions to give information to the tax authorities, and they're passing that information over to the French, the Spanish, wherever their clients are resident. They're now under a statutory obligation to pass that information over, and they're identifying a fairly substantial amount of financial information: names, addresses, the state of residence of the individual, their tax identification number. And so, you know, everyone now who has thought in the past that the bastion of Switzerland, with its enshrined banking secrecy legislation and the manner in which it has conducted itself over the last couple of centuries, certainly at least, that is now ended. And I think if you think that Switzerland is ending its banking secrecy, you have to understand that the rest of the world is probably going to have to follow suit in the fullness of time. The technology today is so enormous that tracking you down and finding out where your assets and your wealth is located is a very simple process. We leave a huge ledger trail behind us, and this decision by Switzerland comes for a number of reasons, but it is an indication that the most well-established, most highly respected centre for banking secrecy has decided to capitulate to an era of automatic information exchange.
Do you find that slightly unbelievable, Bill?
It still takes my breath away a bit. You know, I've been in this business now for something approaching 47 years, and I have in the past utilised Switzerland in appropriate cases for clients, and it's slick, it's efficient, it's secure, and of course it was confidential. And it's a shock, and you know, as you get older, the realisation that things are changing very fast, you have to sort of move with the times and change with them. So I've got to accept that this is a fact of life. But yes, it is. It's not really surprising that it's happened, in the sense that I've watched it gradually becoming a reality over the last 13 or 14 years. But that it has actually arrived in such a tenacious way that 7,000 institutions have passed over information about 2 million clients to the tax authorities of other areas of the world. Can you imagine that if you have used Switzerland to be secretive about your assets, and suddenly there is a disclosure of your assets to the tax authority of the country in which you're living, it is going to have the ramifications, this issue of Switzerland making information exchange, rather like the stone thrown in the middle of the pond. There will be lots of ripples that come out from that stone, and they will continue to ripple until they get to the edge. When they get to the edge, there will be some distinctly uncomfortable clients of the banks, I guess, around the Western Hemisphere, whose affairs will no longer be held secret.
Well, as you say, Bill, we have been watching this for some time, but can you go back and take us through the history and how this has happened?
Yeah, I mean, in a sense, as I say, it's not entirely a surprise, given that there's been the development. The EU, of course, were the pioneers of automatic information exchange with its Savings Tax Directive, which came onto the statute books 13 years ago in 2005. And that was limited just to your savings income. But, you know, we discussed this then, Howard, and I said to you at that time that this was the writing on the wall, that there would be, if this worked, that this would introduce new legislation which would be more intense in its nature and more successful in the data it collected. Now, the simple fact is that at that time, because when you mentioned Switzerland and the loss of banking secrecy, everyone said, oh, this is just scaremongering. Well, of course, that, I'm glad to say, it wasn't wrong. I'm sorry it's come to pass in some respects. But on the other hand, you know, in a developing world where information is freely available, it's inevitable that these centres like Switzerland, which have had this advantage for so long, should now be alongside other issues, other institutions in sharing this information.
Yeah.
The Swiss have taken the opportunity of the introduction of the Common Reporting Standard, which I think has been the game changer here. That Common Reporting Standard is now being adopted by nations around the globe and increasing in numbers, and it's monitored very closely on the US version of information exchange, which itself is very thorough. And you know, we're likely to see a greater level of information exchange now that Switzerland are also on the bandwagon.
Yeah. Do you know if then there's any information they're not sharing?
There's quite a lot of information that they can't share, but most of that is to do with Swiss nationals and their own affairs, because there is statutory provision within Switzerland for the protection of indigenous Swiss nationals.
Uh-huh.
So for Swiss nationals, there's some degree of protection, but if you are, for example, a British person living in Spain or France or Portugal or Cyprus or Malta or any of the other European countries, you won't be treated in the same way. You are, in a sense, fair game for the new immediate and annual automatic exchange of information.
Yeah. But, Bill, what you said, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. Regarding the Swiss, perhaps.
Yes, I think. Yes, I don't think that Swiss nationals, who are indigenous Swiss, who have their assets in Switzerland, have much to fear, because the Spanish authorities, I beg your pardon, the Swiss authorities, already have enough information on Swiss account holders. And the simple fact is that they have a national bank account. They are a national. Why would there's no point in? I mean, obviously, they're looking to collect tax from tax evaders, even in Switzerland.
Yeah.
But there's not the standard of reporting on automatic information exchange is really to do with the partners within the Common Reporting Standard Agreement.
Yeah. Well, here in Spain, what will the Spanish authorities do with this information, Bill?
I think this has been such a long time in coming that I suspect. That at the end of the Spanish tax authority, I guess, is well prepared for this. And of course, with modern technology and communications at the click of a button, it's not difficult to understand that when the information arrives, it will come in, I guess, quite significant numbers to places like Spain, and it will take some sorting out. And there may be no implications for some time whilst they begin to investigate the affairs of those reports that they receive. But I can tell you that when the Swiss have made information disclosure in the past upon request, when there's been the thought that there might be a criminal act involved, where the Swiss are then prepared to release information, it has led to the most horrendous prosecutions in France, for example. And indeed, I'm sure that the issues which the Swiss banking and investment institutions were confronted with when Americans used the Swiss accounts for tax evasion in America. I mean, there have been billions of dollars of fines loaded upon some of the major Swiss institutions because they were assisting Americans with tax evasion. Now, when the institutions themselves start to be fined billions and it filters through to their shareholders and the reputational risk that then exists for the country itself, of course, there's the pressure then for the government and for the institutions to change the way in which they do business. And that, in a sense, has been what has led to the rather quicker agreement to exchange information than I had expected. I did not think it would come into play for another 2 or 3 years. But I think when you see that several billions of fines have been imposed on some of the most highly respected large institutions in Switzerland, it's hardly surprising that they've decided to play the game by a different set of rules.
Yeah. So did a lot of other countries start exchanging information this year? How many countries now are applying the Common Reporting Standard?
Well, the Common Reporting Standard is now in place in a minimum of 102 countries, and that includes most of the European Union countries. Belgium, for example, is in there, France is in there, Germany is in there, Gibraltar is in there, the Isle of Man is in there, Ireland, Jersey, the Cayman Islands, Luxembourg, even the United Kingdom. They signed up to this agreement in 2017 and started the first exchanges at the beginning of this year. But this year, there have been agreements from a whole raft of other places, Andorra, Switzerland, as we've just heard, Panama, given the stuff that took place in Panama earlier this year, late part of last year. Hong Kong is in up for agreeing to abide by the Common Reporting Standard from this year. And despite the fact that lots of people have been saying, well, can't I move my money to Hong Kong? Can't I move my money to Singapore? What are you going to do? Keep chasing your money to a place that ends up being an atoll somewhere in the Pacific? Because what you've got to do is to get legitimate tax planning behind you to avoid the risk of tax evasion and to be unafraid of tax disclosure. In this year, we're also going to see the inclusion of Monaco, perhaps a close second to Switzerland in terms of banking secrecy. They are now going to apply the Common Reporting Standard. So by the end of this year, 102 nations will have signed up to the treaty. There's another half a dozen coming through in 2019-20, and there are still 42 countries waiting to agree the terms of the Common Reporting Standard who will come into the treaty at a later stage. And those territories are highly unlikely to bother most established expatriates living in Spain. They cover places like Armenia, Botswana, the Dominican Republic, Georgia, Guatemala. These are small countries whose development of modern legislation often takes several years to come to the statute books.
Yeah. Do you think all this activity, Bill, has changed the way people handle their cross-border assets and tax planning?
Oh, undoubtedly. I mean, before this, before the Swiss decided to jump on the bandwagon, we've been dealing with the European Union Savings Tax Directive and all the other directives that have followed on from the success of that, because it collected millions in undeclared income. And within Blevins-Franks, for example, we see a massive number of people who've come to us now who have assets and who want to declare them, who want to take up legitimate tax planning rather than take the risks of being guilty of tax evasion, whether intentionally or by omission, because if you don't understand the laws, if you get caught, that's no excuse. And Blevins-Franks, of course, have been there for, in continental Europe now for over 40 years giving this advice. And our advice has always been to play the cards fairly and evenly and only pay under Caesar in terms of tax what is due under Caesar by using legitimate and properly structured, careful wealth management.
I suppose, Bill, many people listening to this programme they live in this country perhaps and have assets and income in another. And do you think that many mistakenly play tax in the wrong country?
Yes, I think they do, actually. There's quite a lot of people who believe, for example, that if they have, let's give you a simple example, rental income from property that's rented out in the UK, which is subject to tax in the UK, given the income arises there, they believe that having paid their tax in the UK, that's the end of their liability. Well, it might be, but you still have to report the gross income that you made from your rental income to the Spanish tax authorities, and that you're then under the double tax treaty given a credit for the amount of tax that you paid in the UK. And if there is a surplus of tax payable in Spain above that which you paid, you pay the excess. Unfortunately, if you paid more in the UK than you would have paid in Spain, you don't get a refund. That's just the way the tax laws work. And there are lots of examples of people who genuinely believe that they have paid their tax to the right tax authority because that's what they have been told, or they've just assumed that that's the case. it's dangerous to assume things in this neck of the woods, because if you are innocent of tax evasion but nonetheless have evaded tax, if you see what I'm trying to say, you've simply made a mistake. The discovery of that mistake won't just be contained to that mistake. You will become the victim of a tax investigation, and they usually last for a long time, sometimes a year, sometimes 2 years. They are oppressive, life-changing, and unwelcome. So it's a great idea to make sure that if you do have income or capital gains or other tax liabilities arising within your assets, within your affairs, that you ensure that you're certain that you're paying tax to the right tax authority, and then at the same time as you're certain you're paying to the right tax authority, calculate with the assistance of people like Blevins Franks how you can mitigate your tax liability to legitimately to the lowest level.
Yeah. And how can people get in touch with Blevins Franks?
I think the best way, frankly, if you're listening to this broadcast, you're bound to be close to one of the Blevins Franks offices in Spain. They're located in most of the popular areas for British people. If you look at the website, blevinsfranks.com, you'll find an office not too far from you. Certainly, if you've got a telephone, you can make contact. They'd love to hear from you. And indeed, making an inquiry is sometimes just a small, inexpensive way, often without charge, to find out whether or not you've got things right. It's always worthwhile being certain that you're doing you're making your tax payments and you're arranging your affairs in the right way.
Many thanks as always, Bill. Very interesting today. We'll talk at the same time next week.
It's a pleasure, Howard. Have a good week.